fier dormeur gardait l'exemple en mémoire de ce héros peines endurcies au doux sommeil. Point de sursis,
point de sursis,
point de sursis.
Songez aux mangeurs pantagruéliques qui pour ménager à ses victuailles un surtrajet jusque à l'ombilic sort de table et s'affale sur la paille.
Good morning and welcome to episode 198 of Taking the Charge Podcast with you from Zaragoza, Spain. I had to think about it there for a second where I was. I'm David Hine of Hine News. Thanks for stopping by. Hoops. We are at the under 17 year FIBA 2016 FIBA U17 World Championship. Great to have you on board. And here in Zaragoza, Spain, to check out the basketball, check out the fourth ever biennial under 17 Worlds. First time ever that it's been being run with the women as well at the same time. A youth festival, as they're calling it, and it's been a fun tournament, to say the least. Some absolutely fantastic players. Before I get too much into that, just want to kind of let you know how you can get in contact with the show. You can reach us at Hine News on Twitter, HEINNEWS. The website is hinenews.com. And the Facebook group is Taking the Charge Podcast. If you go in and check out the groups, you'll find that. Come into group, and we will welcome you with open arms, but we do want to actually let you in. So there's hinenews@gmx.de is the website. You can rate and review the show on iTunes, and I think that's about it. We are at the quarterfinal stage. We've reached the final eight, and I don't think there's necessarily a surprise. That's not quite true. There's one big surprise. But that's really about it. I would say the only real surprise is that Korea has made it to the top. To the top eight, to the quarterfinals, and they ended up beating China in the round of 16, they actually they're in the quarterfinals, whereas Bosnia and Herzegovina, the European championships, the European champions from under 16 last year, are out. They lost a fantastic showdown with Australia in the round of 16. Dusan Musa type things and scored 34, but it wasn't enough. Sandy Champara, I think, scored 17, 18, but unfortunately missed three three-pointers and really a gimme layup all within the last 40 seconds. Bosnia had five offensive rebounds in the 40 seconds and couldn't put it back in. The Australians held on. An amazing performance by Dragan Elkas for Australia, who scored 17 points for the second time in this tournament, but we'll get into that in depth a little bit later. So I guess that's probably the only real surprise, that Bosnia is in it. Bosnia is not in, and Korea are in. That's not necessarily to say that one for one those teams would have replaced each other. So quarterfinals, we have Turkey against Canada, Latvia against France, USA against Australia, and Spain against Australia, sorry. And USA against Korea. Yeah, and then so the bracket is the winner of the winner of the Turkey Canada game faces the Spain Australia winner, and then the other bracket is USA Korea winner take on the all European quarterfinal of Lithuania and France. And then on the other side, I mean, it looks like you would think that Bosnia are going to bounce back and finish ninth. They play Taipei. Dominican Republic play Mali. Finland play Egypt, and Argentina play China. By far, the class of that group is Bosnia, probably second being Finland. So let's kind of just look a little bit at the tournament so far. You know, the games that you kind of looked ahead of time and thought were going to be really good games were really good games. The Canada-Australia group stage was a fantastic showdown. Dragan Elkas scored 17 in the fourth quarter of that game. RJ Barrett was just too much. And Canada ended up winning, taking the driver's seat for the top spot, which then obviously meant that they wouldn't take on the Americans until the final. And that was a great game, and probably the best game of the tournament so far. I guess maybe you can also say that the other Australia game yesterday against Bosnia was a classic. Other than that, I guess really that's about it. You actually had a pretty exciting first game. Actually, the very first game of the tournament, Jalen Horde scored 41, but it wasn't enough as France got beat by Korea. And we're coming to Korea in a minute. It looks like those are the only games that really kind of stood out. That was a blowout. Yeah. So, I mean, you really haven't had a lot of great games. The Korea-China game was pretty exciting yesterday in the round of 16. You had, obviously, the Asian battle trying to get to the quarterfinals, and Korea won that. Let's move to Korea. Korea's a pretty impressive little group there. You know, they really are an undersized team and just play their ball and don't care about anything else, and they have their style. It's quick, it's running, it's shooting threes, and they've produced three wins now, which is two wins more than they had accomplished in the first two U-17 World Championships. Really, you know, you look at they have a seven-man rotation. It's really six-man rotation, seven-man rotation max. In that China game, three guys played 40 minutes, and if their captain hadn't gone down with an ankle injury, he probably would have played. The captain being Yang Jiemin, he probably would have played 40 minutes as well. And you know, they just go 40 minutes of this and say, hey, if you're gonna be taller than us, but we're just gonna beat you on other stuff. They're averaging almost 9 threes a game, shooting only 30%, but it's been good enough to win. 80% of their threes. They don't really turn the ball over a lot. 12 turnovers a game. Produce 9 steals a game. Just try to get out and run. Make their free throws. Just a fun type of basketball. They're going against the Americans. Really good American group. Tons of talent. The main guys you look at, probably Wendell Carter, Gary Trent Jr., Cartier Gordon is a really fun player. You look at Jaren Jackson is probably one of the top long-term talents. Is a little bit raw still right now. Just Kevin Knox. It just keeps going on and on. Colin Sexton's actually done really well. He's actually their leading scorer. Marcus Howard's done a pretty good job running things. Troy Brown, just goes on and on. Austin Wiley's a really nice low post player. Totally loaded. Canada has been really great to watch with Barrett making the team, making it back to the team. Simi Chitu, you have Ignas Bratsikas, Emmanuel Ekot, Stefan Smith, another team that's fully loaded. So just real exciting team. And I think they're going to give the Americans a run for the money if they get there. I think that the American size is a little too much. Egypt, I have to look at Ahmad Khalef. Bebo has really impressed. Not that I didn't expect that he's doing exactly what I thought he was going to do. He's averaging 17 points, 12 and a half rebounds, almost 5 blocks a game. Esam Mustafa is averaging a double-double too with 10.2 points and 12.2 rebounds. It's really been those two and Tariq Rafat, who's averaging 16 points, shooting 43% on his threes. So that kind of but this just, they need another one or two more guys to really compete against some of these big nations. I mentioned Korea, France. France, I think, actually have a pretty good chance. You look at the athleticism of these guys and, Yves Pawn, you have Jalen Horde, Timothy Bazile, Oliver Saar. There's Yvonne Favre. This team is really stacked. Howard has been the overwhelming dominant player for this team, scoring 24. Of course, you had the 41 in the opening game, but 24 is still pretty high number. Pons he's averaging 11 points in 13 minutes. When he comes on, he's just so spectacular. Favreau has been so super solid, 14 and 10. Can they beat the Americans? Well, we'll find out. They're in the USA half of the bracket. Then they take on Lithuania. Take a guess. They can shoot the ball. You have that super dangerous duo of Ignas Sargionas and Lukas Jukleckas. Just two absolute super shooters, both averaging 38%+ per game. Granatas Vasilakas is kind of their low post guy, but they go really 10, 11 deep. Everybody comes in and does their thing. So it's an impressive group. I don't know if they're gonna be able to stack up physically, athletically with the French in the quarterfinals. If those kids can hit some threes, then I definitely think it's gonna be a ball game. Spain, nice group with Miguel Gonzalez has kind of been banged up a little bit, suffered an ankle injury before the Argentina game, missed the round of 16 game, but I imagine he's going to be go for the Australia game. There's Sergio Martinez has been fantastic. You also look at, I guess those are their two main guys. Osas Ahigator is the big low post player for them. He's done a pretty good job for them. Miguel Gonzalez. Yeah, those are probably the three main guys. They're a decent group. They're they obviously are pretty deep. than they're deeper than they were last year. You know, Joel Parra and Carlos Alesen are both 2000s, and both have some nice little skill set. You know, Josep Busquets, Joey Buckets, shooting 30% from threes, but you know, if he gets hot, he could be dangerous. He's really their main shooter alongside of Gonzalez. If you look at Gonzalez's numbers, they're way under what they should be, because he only played that 1 minute in the game against Argentina. So I think that's about it. I think we got. I mean, the Chinese have been kind of, I think, a little bit disappointing, knowing how much preparation that they did have. You know, Zhu Rongzhen has been pretty solid. Bai Huatan has been all right. He's been fantastic. But kind of underperforming in my eyes a little bit. And Turkey taking on, Turkey is facing, I'm trying to think, was Turkey in the quarterfinals, are facing, let's see if they come up quick, come on, should know this, Canada, of course, Canada. Yatwanar Alpatim has been really up and down. Amichan Duran has been really up and down. Mayamin Mustafa has also been really up and down. Raghib Aptar has actually been pretty solid when he's been on the court. So there's talent there, but they're not playing very good basketball right now, it seems. And they might really struggle against the Canadians. I'm going to leave it with that. Kind of give you some more views next week when we close off the World Championship. Head on to the interviews. This actually is going to go back a while ago. I don't actually know why I didn't run it the last 2 weeks, but it seems like we're going to be focusing a little bit on Australia this week. So I'm going to run the interview I did with Tom Fullerton, who was one of the main guys for Australia, along with Sam Froehling. And then obviously Dragan's playing, obviously huge in the fourth quarter. This is my talk from back in Albert Schweitzer. So it's actually Tom Fullerton speaking about the under-17s ahead of time. So Tom Fullerton to start off, and we'll catch you on the other side of that.
Okay, Tom Fullerton, we're here at the Albert Schweitzer tournament. You guys finished seventh. Started with a big loss, but then got a big win. Tight game against Argentina. Went to overtime and beat Turkey, and then had two more losses than the win today. This is a 98 tournament. A lot of you guys were 99s and 2000s. How do you think the team did?
I think we did well. We started off a bit slow. Started against Serbia. We just found our feet later in the tournament. Had our best game against Turkey. Got the win in overtime. And I think we really stuck together as a group. Like, a lot of us, this was our first international tournament, playing against different international players. So it was a great learning experience for all of us.
It was our first game against. I mean, Serbia is a pretty decent team, if you will.
Yeah, credit to them. They're in the final today. They're a great team. And they really just jumped us at the start. Like, we weren't ready for that international standard, but over the course of the tournament I think we really stepped up at the end.
What game would you say is like the game that, let's say, typifies the level you guys could play?
I reckon I thought we were good enough to play all games. Like, we never went into a game thinking these guys are better than us. We all believed in each other, believed in our games, and didn't think we thought we could win every game we played.
But I mean, like, the way you guys played in that game, and which, I mean, like, say...
Against Serbia?
Yeah. No, any of the games. Which one do you think you really, the team played, you know, played the best?
Yeah, I have to say Turkey. Yeah. Because, like, going into it, they thought, like everyone thought Turkey were going to beat us because we had big loss to Serbia and had to really dig deep, play our best basketball. Yeah. And yeah, thought we really played good against Turkey.
This is a preparation tournament for the 99 and 2000s for the under 17s. How important was it for you and the others to get this experience of playing against, you know, pretty high level at 98s, a year older?
Yeah, like it's a great learning step for us because obviously the guys we play at 17s would be 99 and below 2000s. So playing against the 98s was like challenged us immensely and gave us a great learning curve for us.
The biggest thing you learned?
Biggest thing I learned is just be strong with the ball. Like this tournament really highlighted the individual skills and parts of my game that I have to improve before I get to 17. So like, yeah, it was great to just highlight those aspects and what I need to work on.
In that first game, you were passive. Would that be accurate? That you seemed kind of, and then you got kind of came out of that and were just, you know, more assertive in general, or?
Yeah, like I wouldn't say I was passive. Probably just a bit nervous as well, like first international tournament. But yeah, I thought I found my feet throughout the tournament. Started being more aggressive, more assertive on offense and defense.
Maybe talk about what kind of expectations you guys go into the Saragossa, into the under 17s. You know, you guys trying to find, I think. I know the 19s have had a lot of success.
The last 17s group came second.
The 17s was with Humphreys and Wilson, right. Yeah. So, I mean, and so what kind of expectations do you guys have?
Yeah, well, obviously the group before us did really well. So we don't look at them and look at us and think compare ourselves to them. But we have a pretty solid group. Preparation is going to really start to step up a bit now. Before like have pre-camps, pre-tournaments. So I reckon we're in good shape at the moment, and we bring it to Zaragoza and try our best.
You don't have Dragan, Bynes isn't here, and Dent's not here. How much do you think that, add those guys to this group? What's going to make you guys dangerous?
Yeah, like I think just our different aspects are all in the team. We were a pretty small team at the Oceania qualifiers, but we really had like a lot of, we're a run and gun team, really good shooting. So I think just being a quick up and down, defensively locked down team, I think we can really like disrupt teams on defense and start our offense off that.
You've been at AAS for a while, COE, whatever you want to call it. How much has that helped you? You know, it's produced so many players over the years. What's the biggest couple things that you've taken out of that?
Well, the thing at Centre of Excellence is just being able to wake up every day and just get better, bring your best. And we're training against some of the best, like you're always training against some of the best players in the country. You're training against living with guys who you play against every day. And I think that's the most important part, is just being able to wake up every day and put in work, refine your game. And like that's the best part about it, the facilities they offer with physiotherapy, courts, coaches. It's just elite program, and so lucky to have the opportunity to be there.
What are some of the things you're working on in your game that you want to get better?
Trying to work on my shooting, obviously, keep working on that. Need to work on my handle and dribble because I'm a taller guard. Need to be able to hold the ball against smaller guards so they can't take it away from me. And being a bit more of a leader as well, looking at that aspect of my game.
Do you want to be a leader then of this team in Saragossa? Is that one of your goals?
Yeah, they'll look at me as a leader in 17s. I was captain of the previous team, and we have a good, solid leadership group in that team. So like I'll be one of the leaders, and we'll have many others, a couple from this team as well.
You're at Adidas Nations in 2014. Looking back, what's the couple of things that you take from that? And you know what I mean, because obviously that was probably your first real eye opener. You know, looking back, how do you remember that?
Well, I remember just reflecting on when I came back. I was obviously really young when I went there, and looking at the talent that was there was a massive eye-opener to me, seeing the athletes that were there and the skill level that was required to play at that level. So that was really just a good learning experience for me to just drive me to become a better player. After that tournament, that's when I took up the scholarship for the AIS, and that was my first step of becoming, like, reaching that level to play at, like, with the guys at the international level.
I saw somewhere you said that sort of one of your heroes is Joe English, because didn't go to college to make it to the NBA.
Yeah.
Reflect on that. You know, it was actually you mentioned Delhi in there as well. You went to St. Mary's, but you know, there's still Ingles, and the idea is what was there. Talk about that now.
Well, I look up to Joe Ingles as a player just because of his passing ability. Like, similar player to me, I guess. Taller guard, shoot the ball, and yeah, his journey to get to the NBA was like something special. I just want to make my own journey to the NBA. I don't haven't planned any steps at the moment. I'm just taking it each day as it comes, and hopefully I'll get to the highest level eventually.
Is college something that you're thinking about at all, or?
Yeah, I'm open to college interests and that, and at the moment I'm just taking it as it comes, taking out my options, weighing them up.
I mean, that's something that this team, that this country is kind of fighting, especially for national team competitions at the youth level, because there's, you know, no chance for them coming back. How much of a factor is that in these players' decisions, you know, that, you know, knowing that you might miss out on a competition like this? I mean, the U18s is in December, and so, you know, none of the guys in the States are even going to be able to. I mean, maybe talk about the whole dynamic of the fact that, you know, so many of you guys are over in the States. I mean, we saw with Jonah and Ben that weren't able to come to the 19s last year.
Yeah, well, really all it comes down to is who's available at the time, and I know Basketball Australia is just, they just want everyone to do what they're happy with, as long as they're enjoying basketball and like making the best choices for them, then that's what's going to happen. So really it's up to the individual of what they want to do, and if they want to come back and play for Australia, then it's up to them.
Do you think that the NBL is sort of is getting better as far as the option of maybe not going to college, but maybe staying with the NBL? Is it getting better in your eyes? I mean, I know they're taking steps to improve it, and but what do you think about that?
Yeah, definitely. I think the NBL has made great improvements over the last couple of years, and I know all the guys at the AIS look up to certain teams and certain players in the NBL, and we're all behind the NBL. And I know a few of the guys like Jack White, DJ, were training with a few NBL teams over the holidays, and yeah, they're being really cooperative, like helping us, getting us into trainings and that. So I reckon it's taking really good steps in the right direction.
Let's go with that.
Okay. He's played a lot better. Tom Fullerton played a lot better here at this tournament than I think he did at the Albert Schweitzer, which makes sense because they were all a year younger. This is his age group. Next interview, final interview, second interview, longer interview, is with Olgan Ulic, the lead basketball writer for Fox Sports Australia. I had a chance to sit down with him and a long chat about Australian hoops, kind of focusing on the Australians here at the U17 World Championship. So that's why I kind of left the Australians out of it. So nice long chat with him, not just about Australia here at the under-17s, but we'll also touch on Thon Maker and Ben Simmons being drafted in the NBA, and then also you look at the Rio Olympics for the green and gold. Enjoy, and we'll talk to you then in a while.
We are welcoming this week Olga Nolic, the lead basketball reporter at Fox Sports Australia. Olga, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be on this show.
We are at the 2016 FIBA Under-17 World Championship. We were here watching a good game yesterday. You live, me unfortunately live streaming it because I was at the other gym watching a boring game. Australia and Bosnia-Herzegovina. I guess first of all, thoughts about the tournament in general, and then we could talk a little bit more about that game in particular. But maybe just in general, thoughts about the tournament. Obviously, but Australia being two-time runners-up, there's some expectations on them, whether or not that's fair or not. In general, thoughts about the tournament?
Well, yeah, that's the thing. The 4 years ago, that was the team that had Dante Exum and had Ben Simmons. And the team 2 years ago, it had Isaac Humphries, Dejan Vasiljevic. So both silver medal winning teams. The last one lost to the USA by 7 points, so that was, they nearly came away with a win in that tournament. This one, there wasn't as much pressure going in. Granted, you know, there were two silver medal teams before them, but you know, the talent was noticeably not as good as the individual talent on this team. And then, you know, when they nearly beat Canada, they probably should have beat Canada. They collapsed at the end. You know, we thought maybe this team could do something. And then the China game, the Chinese team was just tough. They dominated us. So I thought, you know, maybe this is the team that we all expected. But no, big win against Finland, and then this game here, and you know, this team looks like, as far as the talent, it's not as good as we've seen. It's probably not one of the best in the tournament, but it looks like they've found something. They found a way that everyone's found a little role. I think every player on that team, while not the most individually talented, every kid has found a way to carve a role on this team. You know, Mark Watkins goes 11 deep, which is odd. You know, he played 10 players in the first quarter of that Bosnia game. So that's, I don't know. We'll see how they go against Spain. This is a really unpredictable team.
I think they can beat Spain. And Spain doesn't have a dominating personality like the Bosnians do, and they were able to at least slow him down, Musa.
Yeah.
What did we say? 38%? Is that right?
Just 37.5%, which
And the Canadians, they're just way more athletic. Than they are.
Yeah, Canadians are just America, USA light. That's
exactly
what they are.
And that's one thing that this Australian team is not overly athletic.
Yep.
Although they did a lot better than the friendly in France, okay, where obviously they were hiding things.
Yep.
But going to Spain, they're not physically dominating at all, and actually they're smaller than the Australians. You know, you look at the Australians, you know, height, and I think that they have an advantage down there. They really only have Ehi Gator, the big African-born. And I mean, you're able to slow down Musa.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't actually know how fit Gonzalez is. He only got hurt in the first minute of the Argentina game. They struggled without him, and then they blew out Chinese Taipei. So Sergio Martinez is fantastic.
Okay.
And there's a couple other guys who are really good on that team, but I don't think there's a team that really Australia should be scared about in the least.
No, it's. I don't think it's the only team Australia should be scared about is themselves. They're the kind of team where you kind of know what you're going to get from Tom Fullerton. You know what you're going to get from Sam Frohling. Those two are kind of the two marquee guys here. But really, it's just are you going to get consistent a consistent scoring effort from Dragon? Are you going to get that from Callum Dalton? Callum Dalton had a very sneakily good game in this Bosnia game. Are you going to get any point guard play? That's been something that, I don't know, it's been lost with Australia. They've gone to a few different starting point guards. They haven't gone to Lachlan Dent much at all. So,
and he was the starting point guard last year, right?
Yeah, I pegged him as a starting point guard for this team, but he's not getting many minutes at all.
Okay, let's talk about him. Let's talk about the Dragon.
The Dragon.
You know, I was at the game against Canada.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, 1-3, and then another 3, and another 3. 17 points in the fourth quarter weren't quite enough, and they actually made the questionable decision in the last two possessions to go to really non-factors offensively. Okay, you have to put a little bit of that on the Canadians, but you know, somehow go to your guys, find a way to get to your guys, and then, to be honest, I don't even know what he did the other two games.
Not much.
And then comes the fourth quarter again.
Yep.
1-3. And then another. He's not going to do it again. And he does it again. Unbelievable. 17 points again.
Four
three-pointers.
Yep.
17 points of his 25 in the fourth. And this time they prevail with the 17 in the fourth. The question then is, all right, so this is the first time anybody outside of Australia, probably even for many people in Australia,
yeah,
have seen or even heard of this guy.
Yeah.
What can you tell us about him? What do you think is this just like a one-off two-game amazing fairy tale thing that's going to end, it's going to crash to reality tomorrow, or what? I mean, you know, is it big game Dragan? Is he a guy that picks it up in big games, or like, who is this guy?
So the one thing about him is that he's always been a streaky shooter. That's what he is. That's his game. And so that's why you're going to get that performance against Canada and that one against Bosnia, but you're not going to get that against China and against Finland. So he's streaky. If one shot goes in, they're all going to go in. That's just the way it works with Dragan. So he's out of Bankstown in Sydney. I live close to him. And that's what he does for his Bankstown team. He has to do more for that team, but you know, on this Australian team, he's just got to shoot. And that's what he hasn't been doing. You know, at the start of that game, he wasn't shooting. He was passing a lot of shots that he probably should have taken. And then he started hitting them. He thought he has to kind of take over. I think they were down 5 going into that fourth quarter. He had to take over. Made one, and they just kept feeding him. But I don't want to say this is a one-off, obviously, because he's done it twice now. But I really don't see him as a genuine high-level guy. As in, you see the genuine high major guys on this team, and I don't think Drang is one of them. I think he can be a really good kind of mid-major player. And that's what that was basically the consensus among the coaches in the stands and that kind of thing. But can he do this again? He probably can do it again. But I think now that he's done it twice, teams are wary of this now. They're gonna play up on him. They're not gonna let him do that again.
The first game against Canada, I saw a good grouping of these guys in Mannheim at the Albert Schweitzer tournament, and I was a little bit disappointed. I didn't really have any huge expectations, but I was a little bit disappointed with how Sam Froehlich played.
Yeah.
And obviously didn't see any of the warm up friendly games, but. You saw in moments against Canada that he really was one of the few guys that really belonged on the court. Not maybe the entire game, but you definitely saw flashes. And the moment that I really was impressed with is you had it was a 1-point game, and you had Dragan, who had just buried those 4 threes. He had scored a 17. Froehlich was at the top of the key, and Dragan was next to him, and obviously Elkas, Dragan's defender, was draped all over him, and he drives to the basket.
Yep.
It's a really tough fall-away layup off the glass.
Yep.
And I thought, that's a tough shot for a kid like that. And so he's a 2000er, so he's a year younger than these guys.
Yep.
But you know, you see flashes. Obviously there's loads of basketball genes in his family and his blood and all that, but what are your thoughts about how he's done here, and where do you see, you know, he still has some work to do, maybe more than other 2000ers, but where do you see him?
So he's probably out of this team, he probably has the highest ceiling out of anyone. You know, he's a legitimate 6'10", and he's skilled. He can shoot the ball. Which, if you're 6'10" and you can shoot the ball, then everybody wants you. But no, he's been one of the more impressive guys here. I think he should be starting. He's coming off the bench. Granted, Matthew Johns' game against Bosnia, while he didn't shoot the ball well, he does a bit of everything. Sam Froehlich doesn't do that. But no, Sam's just young. He's a smart player, though. For his age, he has really good footwork. He knows what he's doing on the court. He can shoot the ball. I think he'll be one of the more important players going forward, just because you know what you're going to get from him. You know, he struggled a little bit with the physicality of this Bosnian team, but you know, you can trust him on the court at the end of the game, as opposed to, say, having a Callum Dalton, who while he was impressive against Bosnia, he's a bit more raw than Sam Folling is. He's got a bit of work to do. Same with Kyle Bowen coming off the bench. You know, he's not as experienced as a guy like Froling, who, you know, he's from a basketball family. And he's confident as well. There's no shortage of confidence in that Froling family.
And Froling family, if you think Froling, Harry Froling, and you think, oh, this is his brother, he's like him, he's not as much of a block.
No.
As Harry. He's a lot slender and more mobile.
He's more advanced at this age than Harry was, I think, as well.
Yeah, but not physically.
No.
Near the same level. For positive and negative, whatever. Yeah. You know, but and lefty too.
Yeah, that's what people like that.
I have a thing for lefties, as people on the show know, listeners to the show know. I mean, is there anybody do you really else think that like you want to talk about? I mean, obviously Fullerton has probably been the leader in general of the team. Are you happy with how he's performed? Is there anybody else that you want to kind of highlight?
Well, Fullerton has obviously, he's been the guy on this team. I think he's been far and away the best player on this team. He looks extremely comfortable at this level. I haven't seen enough of the USA team or too many of the other teams, but I'd say he'd be one of the better players in this tournament. And, you know, his name's just been buzzing around the stands where the coaches are sitting. He's picked up, you know, his first offer, which is, you know, it's impressive. He was excited about that. But no, other than him, someone I liked was Matthew Johns in that last game. Didn't shoot the ball well, but, you know, defensively, he's more athletic than a lot of us thought he was, and he just works. Shot the ball well in the game against Finland. But no, he's a guy that I liked. And this past game as well, I like Cody Statman, mm-hmm. who is a 2018 kid. He's the baby on the team. He plays young, but he's got a really, really good feel for the game. He's super long, 6'5", and you know, right now he's still really immature physically, but I think he's a kid that could get somewhere.
Yeah, in the one preparation game, in the one friendly, he hit 7 of 9 threes against, I think it was against France.
Yeah. He hasn't shot the ball well this tournament, but you know, he's done a bit of everything, and I feel like if that shot starts to fall, then you know, he's a player that can really impress.
Okay, you're here, and actually, if I'm not mistaken, you came here from the States.
Yep.
So you know, but I mean, you're part of the, let's call it machinery. what kind of expectation do you feel that there is back at home for this team, and now excitement for this team? Because, you know, like we were saying before, this is like one of the only tournaments that, this is the only one of the events that the Australians have. I mean, obviously there's the Olympics, but, you know, under 19s, you know, there's been a history of some of the main guys not showing. But what kind of feeling do you have? I mean, because it's obviously you can't know exactly what's going on back home, but what kind of feeling do you think? Because obviously they were flocking to social media and YouTube yesterday to watch the game.
Well, this is one of those tournaments that's it's accessible to Australians. You know, when these guys, if any of these guys go on AAU tours in the US, or if they go to the Albert Schweitzer tournament, that stuff, it's not televised, it's not streamed, it's difficult to get stats, that kind of thing. And so this is one of the tournaments where, you know, this is a national team. It's the national team. You know, they could watch, Australians can watch this. Granted, it was a 2 a.m. game, but a lot of Australians kind of flock to their computers to watch this or follow the live stats for this game or your live blog. And so right now, after a performance like this against Bosnia, you can feel the tension, which is really cool. It's something similar to what happened 2 years ago when Australia beat Spain. There was a comeback win, went to overtime, Isaac Humphries got that steal and jam. And, you know, after that game, you know, Australians started to feel like, oh, we're a part of this now. This is a tournament that I don't know if we can win it, but we're gonna compete in this and we're gonna back our team. Which is, you know, that's really cool to see now, because this was one of the more unheralded teams in recent memory.
If they go out now in the quarters, will it be a disappointment?
No, not at all. Like this team was expected to go to the quarters, and that was basically
the minimum.
Yeah, And you know, at this stage, if they drop out now, it's nowhere near as disappointing as if it happened to, you know, the Dante Exum team. You know, this team wasn't expected. They don't have any kind of bona fide future NBA like first round like lottery picks as 19-year-olds. This isn't that team. This is a team.
Obviously, you're the Australian basketball, one of the, you know, leading basketball guys for Australian Hoops. Maybe thoughts about having number one and number 10 pick in the NBA draft. Obviously, two guys with totally different stories. You know, Ben Simmons obviously was long considered number one. There was a time where he dropped to number two, and you know, and Maker's been all over the board. You know, 3 years ago he was considered number one. Then people were saying, oh, not even a first rounder, goes to 10.
Yep.
In the quiet little village, if you will, in the NBA landscape of Milwaukee.
Yep.
Which I think might actually be good for him, that there's not all the, you know, hullabaloo about him.
Yep.
Philly getting Simmons at number one, and then Thon going to Milwaukee.
Well, yes, I was at the draft, and, you know, and obviously there was no question that Ben was going to go number one. We knew that
as soon as the Sixers got the pick,
pretty much it was that was a given. And so, you know, that's very cool, just to have a player like him in the NBA now. Australia's never, we had Andrew Bogut, but we've never had a player like Ben Simmons, the way he plays, which that's just going to do wonders for the sport in Australia. Thon was a different story. You know, I was expecting him to go first round. I know the rumors came out about his age and how that was supposed to hurt his stock, but there was really nothing to that. There was nothing substantive to that. You know, a lot of stuff came out, but it never really affected him or his stock at all. But number 10, that shocked me. You know, I was at the draft in New York, and I went and sat with Thon. I asked him, how are you feeling? And he just said, I'm good. And I was like, you're good? And he's just confident. So I don't think he knew that Milwaukee was the team. He knew that he worked out well for Milwaukee, but number 10, that surprised us all. And, you know, it was good for me. My night finished quite early. I was expecting to maybe wait until 25. I was thinking maybe 18 to 25, that's when he'd get picked up. But you know what? I'm happy he went 10. And Milwaukee's a cool landing spot for him, not just because, you know, he's been surrounded by all of this hype. So it's cool for him to be in a location where, you know, he doesn't have that pressure on him. But also just because of the team. It's just a long, young team, and he kind of fits perfectly in that.
Yeah. Second time going somewhere where it's quiet.
Yeah.
Orangeville is not Toronto. I was up there. It's not Toronto. It's an hour away. So, you know, and you're on your own. And Milwaukee, obviously, in the media landscape, is not way up there. So
that's why he went to Orangeville in the first place, to avoid the hype. He had all of that hype surrounding him, and so, you know, Milwaukee, basically,
Milwaukee shocked everybody, taking him where they did. I think probably taking him where they did.
Yeah.
I don't know off the top of my head where they were otherwise. If they could have, I mean, in theory, they could have probably traded down.
Well, that's what I would have thought. But I heard from some of the Bucks front office people that if 1-9 went as expected, which it did, then they were set on getting Thon at 10.
Yeah.
Which, again, they probably could have traded down to 15 or 16 and picked up someone else, or taken him
at 10 or at 15, something like that. That's what I mean.
Yeah.
But so everybody's shocked that they took him at 10. I think more the number than the fit.
Yeah.
Although some people are wondering if what they expect him to be like Antetokounmpo, which is hard for anybody in the world to do that.
Yeah.
But I think more of the 10 is the thing that shocks everybody. How do you think he does? I mean, you know, I saw one recap, you know, said I wouldn't be surprised if he's out of the league in 3 years, or I could see that he's, you know, a burgeoning all-star, you know, or or almost an all-star. How do you think he does?
So I don't think he's out of the league in 3 years. You know, I've been around Thon for a little bit, and he works. That's his thing. His work ethic is essentially unrivaled among this draft class. That's what he has. That's his biggest asset. And so I don't think he's out of the league. I don't think he starts. I don't think he's an all-star in his first few years. He's still got a long way to go physically. His frame still isn't NBA ready. But I think he's able to make some sort of impact in his first year for Milwaukee. You know, I think maybe he should spend a bit of time in the D League, but I feel like Milwaukee sees him as not just a project, but a project that they can start right away, as in they can have him contribute to their team right away, which, you know, going into the draft, it wasn't something that many people said about Thon. You know, he was one of those kind of two years away kind of guys. But no, I think he makes an impact. I don't know what position he plays. I don't know what position he defends, but I have trust that Milwaukee thinks that they did it with Giannis, they can do it with Thon. That's their thinking.
Yeah, they surprised a lot of people taking Giannis at 13.
Yeah, and so they think
that... Or was it 15? May have been 15.
I have no idea. I can't remember. But no, yeah, they did it with Giannis, and he's turned into an amazing two-way guy and a point guard. And so they think Thon, same thing.
Was there any surprises that you thought then? I mean, maybe other than Thon going to 10, but I mean, in general, was there anybody that you kind of said, I don't know?
Well, one of the biggest surprise probably was Papagiannis going at 13, who, you know, I saw him at the last FIBA under 17 event playing for Greece and...
I saw under 19s.
Was that under 19s?
Yeah, in Greece last year.
He also played in Dubai, because I remember the game against Isaac Humphries. And he dunked on Isaac Humphries.
That's true. He did play 17s.
Yeah, and so I remember him from there, and I remember he was a solid player. I didn't think he'd go in the lottery, and so that kind of shocked me. A lot of the Greek media kind of knew, apparently, that he was going to go around the lottery. So that was quite cool. Really, the other surprise was just a guy like Scal Labissiere going at 28, and then Deontay Davis going at 31, which... You know, the new NCAA rules were supposed to help these guys, give them more information so they can make an informed decision. Unfortunately for these guys that were in the green room, it just didn't work out for them. I feel like perhaps they were just given bad information. I don't know.
Yeah, Papagiannis, I know there have been some critics for him, and I'm like, how could you criticize a guy who's that size, at that age, runs the floor,
yeah,
plays defense. I mean, can block shots. He's an intimidator at the rim, and I don't know where all some of this criticism comes from.
Well, and he's been a part of Panathinaikos.
Yeah, he played Panathinaikos.
But he's been a part of a legitimate European club for a while.
2 years. No, he was in the States.
Okay, yeah.
He was in the States, and then there was talk he was going to go to a college then. Instead of getting, you know, we have one more thing I want to talk about is Rio. Simmons obviously is not going to play. I don't know. I assume he's probably on the roster, but I don't know how far along Dante is.
Yeah.
In general. What kind of expectations do the Aussies have going in? Do the Boomers? This one we can say the Boomers.
Yeah, so it's rough. So Simmons obviously dropped out. That was a no-brainer. Dante, last week I think he dropped out.
Did he? Okay.
So he was on the squad. Yeah. He was named.
Remember him being on the squad.
He was named to that 17-man squad.
Yeah.
He dropped out. And then obviously Andrew Bogut went down with that injury. And so... You know, they've added Alex Marich back into the big squad. So I spoke with Alex yesterday, and you know, he told me he's back in that squad. Whether he makes the team, I don't know. But if I feel like they probably have to take another big, whether it's him, whether it's Nathan Jawai, I don't know. But the expectation has gone down quite a bit since that Bogut injury. You know, going into it, they were very clear that they wanted gold. Granted, that was almost a pipe dream, and you know. getting a gold medal, which would be Australia's first ever gold medal in a basketball tournament at the Olympics, that would have been good enough. But, you know, right now I'd be surprised if they medaled. You know, you've got Dele, you've got Joe Ingles, you've got Patty Mills, Aaron Baines, Cameron Bairstow, you've got that group. But I don't know if there's that guy that can take them to the next level. You know, I thought that was Bogut, but, you know, with him questionable, you know, he's not completely out, but he's questionable. With him probably not going to be there, I don't see them meddling at all.
Their group, do you know it off the top of your head?
Yeah, so, oh, do I? They have the USA, they have Venezuela, I think they have China, and they have two teams who are yet to qualify. The two teams will get, yeah. So those two teams are probably going to be solid teams as well. Just those qualifying groups are really, really strong.
You might have France, you might have Serbia.
Yeah, they're super strong, and so it's a tough group. But it's one of those things where if they can finish at the toward the top of it, then they can avoid the United States until the quarterfinal. No, the semifinals, I think.
Like, I suppose it depends on where they finish in the group.
Granted, yes.
Take your Australian hat off. Yeah?
Yeah.
Take away your take off your green and yellow glasses.
Green and gold.
Green and gold, sorry. Sorry, Aussie fan. Take off your green and gold glasses. Do they make the quarterfinals even?
They make the quarterfinals because...
Two Europeans, most likely two Europeans, USA and them.
Yeah. As in China, Venezuela, I think are very beatable teams.
China looked really good at the Asian Championships last year. They played some unbelievably wonderful looking basketball last year.
Sure, but you know, we forget that Australia has five, even without Boga, they have five NBA guys on that team. And you know, they're one of those teams that they're one of the teams that has been together forever. They're not just like a USA team where they come together when they have to play. This is a team that's been together since like 2008. You know, they've come up together, similar coaching staff to some of the last FIBA tournaments. And so, you know, I think they beat China. I think they beat Venezuela. I think they can give one of these European teams a run for their money as well. So as long as they qualify,
without those guys,
with those guys, but without a guy like Bogut, I think they can still shock one of those European teams, whether it's a France, whether it's a Serbia. So really, it's just making that top four.
Yeah, and I have to in order to make the quarters.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so I feel like, well, the top four go straight into the quarters, yeah?
Yeah, there's only the quarters.
Exactly. So I think that...
They have to finish in top four.
So, even taking away any Australian bias that I have, and I try not to have any bias, but I think that it's almost a given that they qualify for the quarterfinals. They make that top four.
What's expectations back in Australia for this team?
They want to medal.
They
want to medal. We've never medaled before, even with that Andrew Gaze 2000 team. You know, we've never medaled. We've come close. So a first medal. It would have been cool to have Bogut because this would have been his Olympic swan song. It would have been his last one, and you know he would have come in. You know, he's ideally coming off another championship, but he's an NBA champion now. So you know he was going to be that guy that just brought the team together. You know, that big man in the middle on both
when
ends.
When was the last time you played?
For this national team? It's been a while. And so every time since then he's missed it, whether because of injury, whether because of rest. And so this injury was just another stab in the hearts of Australians, just because it as soon as he went down, it was like, oh no, it's happened again. This is of course this is happening. But yeah, Australians want to medal. I think, like this under 17 team, quarterfinals is a good goal. Whether they get past that, I'm doubtful. Hope they do, obviously.
Yeah, you figure four would cross. If they do finish four, it probably crosses with one on the other side. So Spain would be on the other side.
Yeah, Spain. I think Lithuania's on the other side.
Is in the preliminary roster. Whether or not he actually makes it is another deal, but.
I think Powell.
Yeah, well, we know Spain, but I mean all their young. I think this is the last chance for them.
Yeah.
This is the last chance for them to go to the Americans. And so I mean, you follow NBA more than I do.
Yeah.
I assume you've seen the USA.
Yep.
Roster. I mean, you might not know it 100%, but where do you I mean, do you think this is the? I mean, you obviously there was the 2012 team, 2014 World Cup team where people thought, you know, this is a beatable team if Spain could get there.
Yeah.
They obviously slipped up.
Yeah.
They're shooting for the US. Is this a team that can be beat?
This USA team?
Yeah.
Look, it can be. I don't think they do lose just because, you know, the worst player on that team would be, Harrison Barnes. And even he would probably be one of the better players on, probably the best player on most of the other teams.
Well, I'm talking Spain.
You're talking Spain?
Spain, USA. If it gets to that in the final.
See, again, you know more about international basketball than I do. So would they have like a Sergio Rodriguez? Would they have Rudy Fernandez?
They're all there. Calderon. I don't know if Navarro, this might.
Okay.
But, I mean, this is their swan song. Because all he's done after this, I would imagine. And Navarro, I don't know. I can't remember if Reyes is in there. Nikolic. Mirotic.
Yeah.
Mirotic instead of Ibaka.
Yeah.
You know, maybe Mark gets back. I mean, if Mark comes back, you know, then if he's able to get there, you have those two beasts in the middle, Mirotic.
Well, honestly, if that's the team that Spain's going to put together, it can give the USA a run for their money. You know, they have, granted, the USA does have Kyrie Irving. They've got Klay Thompson.
Who's the other point guard then?
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Yeah. See, they're just, it's not, it's an odd team they've put together. Like, they've put Draymond in there. Yeah. They've got DeMarcus Cousins.
Yeah.
So I just
the free throw guy, Jordan.
Yeah.
Andre.
Yeah. And so the
hack of DeAndre. Hey, do we see the international play?
Well, that's the thing. I feel like, you know, USA has generally gone away from taking too many big guys. Like usually 2012, I think they took Tyson Chandler.
They just have the two. They just have the two.
Okay. Well, because I feel like they're in there mainly for Spain. To let's counteract Mark and Pau with DeMarcus and DeAndre.
You can play small ball with Durant at the five.
Yep. And so, look, I think if Spain's going to do it, this is the year they have to do it.
Because all those guys are gone. There's no way they're going to be in Tokyo.
Oh, no. That's a while away. And so, yeah, this is, honestly, it's Spain's last chance. The USA team, it's weak, but it's weak relative to the teams that they've put together, but it's strong relative to the rest of this field. It always will be.
All right, come back to this tournament. We're at the under-17s. Who do you have winning it?
I don't want to just be the guy that takes the USA, but you kind of have to.
Just give me a reason why. I mean, you could pick the USA, but tell me why.
The USA, just for all the reasons why they've always been dominant. They're just athletically and physically, they're just more dominant than every other team. You know, they have shooters on this team. The big men play, I know Wiley's been solid. And, you know, they've done their best work even without some of their better guys. I think like Colin Sexton and Kevin Knox and those guys, you know, even when they haven't played, this team has still done really well. So I think once they get into these knockout games and these games start to have more pressure, I think these guys are going to step up. They're not experienced on the international stage, but all of these American guys have seen whatever's in front of them. The only team that I think can compete against them is probably Canada. I really like RJ Barrett and Simi Shitu, and so I really hope that they give them a run for their money.
As soon as they beat Australia, in my eyes, it was set up.
Yeah.
You know, the final was then 100% sure.
And the bracket right now is that they're on a collision course.
Well, that was it. You knew one seed.
Yeah.
Was going to face the USA in the final.
Yeah.
It was set up.
Yeah.
The Aussies can still right now. It could be an Australia Canada rematch in the semis.
Yeah.
So Australia could still get the third final in a row. USA Australia.
And that's not out of the question either.
That's not out of the question. You know, like I said, I think they have a very legitimate chance of beating Spain in the quarters.
And they did well against Canada in that first game, so they could do it again.
Dragan scores 19 points. it's, you know, now that it's set, you're trying to, at least I am, figure out the matchups. You know, who stops Barrett? You know, how would the... I wish that the Canadians, for example, yesterday in that blowout, second half blowout of Dominican, I wish they'd put in their Bedaiko, the big guy with the goggles, because they're going to need his size. And he's definitely not far enough along.
No.
But with Carter and Wiley and Gordon, those three are freaking beasts.
Yeah, they're not just... They're
and Shepard's not stopping them.
No.
And those... Sheets is not stopping them. That's why you need... That's why,
just to have a big body?
Yeah, and get him those minutes
to
give him a little bit of confidence that not that he's thrown in there to, like, the Wolves.
Yeah.
That at least he's been... in there kind of against, let me see if I can find it, what he played yesterday, just to kind of get an idea of what it's like, because if he goes in, and but that was like a golden chance. I'm going to look and see how many minutes he played, but they're going to need that body, because the USA is just that much more bigger.
Yeah, the bigger, the physical.
The Canadians are there.
Oh, no doubt.
I think the Canadians actually might shoot better from the outside. You look at Iggy.
Yeah.
You look at Jurisic, those guys can, Smith.
Yeah.
They can really light it up from outside. But inside, I think that's where I think maybe the best player on the court might be Barrett.
Yeah.
But what does everybody else do?
Well, yeah. See, that's the thing. The Canadians can run with the Americans. Like that's usually where the USA
played 9 minutes.
Okay.
They go 9 minutes.
Yeah. That's the thing. Canada can run with USA. That's usually where the USA has the edge over you. But with a guy like RJ Barrett, you never know. Like you can that team can run with the USA, but whether they can compete inside, whether they can body up against these guys, Canada's brought a lot of stretch forwards, a lot of guys who aren't necessarily used to kind of banging in the low post. And the US with this USA team, it seems like that's
just
all
drop they want. It down.
Yeah,
Gordon, Carter, Wiley, just eat up these guys.
Yeah, and I don't think Simi does too much against those guys.
No, they're all three of them are bigger than Simi.
Yeah.
Simi. So.
Yeah, so like I like Simi. He's an awesome player.
Yeah.
Whether he can do anything against. That USA front line.
I think Barrett might be the one guy where the Americans kind of have to really scheme against.
Yeah.
Whereas Chatou, he's just a good athletic guy, but you're not going to have to really scheme against him.
No. RJ Barrett.
I think Iggy, okay, can cause problems, but I think Barrett's the one guy where you have to like, okay, well, how do we want to slow him down, take the ball out of his hands, make other people beat you? That's the only guy.
Yeah, I'm under the impression that he's the best player in this tournament. And so I wouldn't be surprised if the USA just throws everything at him and lets someone else beat them.
Let me look it up. I'm pretty sure it is anyhow. But June 16th is what I'm going to say.
Is what?
June 16th is the day that he turned 16.
Yeah, because he was with the Canadian senior team.
Yeah, but that's... June 16th. So, he's 2000 born.
He's a 2019 college class.
You're talking international basketball.
I'm sorry about that.
Nobody cares about high school classes and stuff like that. June 14th, sorry. June 14th is when he turned 16.
Wow.
So just turned... 2 weeks ago, he was a 15-year-old.
Training with his senior
playing,
team.
Playing, being considered the best, maybe the best player at this tournament, even though he's a year younger. So,
he's incredible. And, not many 15-year-olds get to train with their national team.
Is there anybody else that you said, hey, man, let's say of the non-North Americans, you knew of Musa coming in.
I got told about Musa heading into that game.
You got told of Musa? You didn't know me not before.
I'm not well versed enough on these Europeans, but I asked my guy from EuroHopes. I said, who should I be looking at?
You should have asked
and
me.
I said, what do you think of this Bosnian team? And he goes, oh, it's not amazing, but there's Musa.
It's a lot
they
of Musa.
They have Musa.
It's a lot of Musa. All right, so then anybody else that you remember?
I don't think so, because I've only been able to go to the Australia games. I've only seen.
Give you the list of teams so that you can at least so maybe that sparks your memory.
oh, see, I can't. It's really just that I've only seen the Australian games and the Canada games. There's just because they've just naturally just been one after the other. And, you know, I've seen one USA game. So, yeah, I'm focused on my Aussies over here. So, yeah, other than...
You're green and gold, baby.
Look, I'm set on...
Well, that's your job, man.
Look, I'm set on... I was happy to see my Dragon versus Musa matchup.
That's fun to watch, man. I wish I was there to watch that live. But...
And I'm not 100% sure, but I'm quite sure that Dragon is of Bosnian heritage. I'm quite sure that's where his family's from, that region. And so that is awesome. The fact that he decided to step up
against Bosnia.
Against his own country.
Well, what about Canada? So is it a Bosnian Canadian background?
Well, a lot of people are telling me that, you know, he's drawing similarities to Dejan Vasiljevic just because, you know, both of them are, their parents are from that region.
I mean, that's fair.
They're shooters. Oh, no, not at all.
I like
DJ was a different level.
Yeah.
Although
both of them, you know, big shot guys.
Yeah.
You know.
Both aren't afraid.
DJ put him in the 18s.
Yeah.
With that last two threes in the
that one at the buzzer. That was.
The one at the buzzer. But it was the one at the. There was two of them inside the minute there.
Yeah.
You know, New Zealand had them on the ropes, right?
Yeah. New Zealand probably should have gone through in that tournament, and New Zealand probably should have gone through to this tournament as well. I'm sad. I'm annoyed that New Zealand's not here. They could do some damage here. They have some really good guys.
Yeah, well, this is. This is 99. So. I guess one last thing.
Yep.
Looking ahead now, you know, you have Rio, and then you have the under-18s.
Yep.
Coming up in December in Fiji. And obviously it's just a setup for the Australia New Zealand.
Yep.
Final.
Basically.
It's a one-off. It's a one-game thing. It's not you know, best of three.
Yep.
Obviously, Kenyon.
Matt Kenyon.
Is looking to try to go to college this coming season, coming year.
I've heard questions about his eligibility, but...
That's what I heard as well.
Yes.
But, I mean, in general, he'd like to try to go to college, which would basically make him unavailable.
Yep.
Tour maker has expressed interest in playing.
He's expressed interest. I know Ed Smith has spoken to Adam Caporn, and that's basically done.
Yeah.
That he will be a part of at least that squad to make that team, so that's very
98.
Cool.
So, I mean, you could have some of the 99s, you know. I can imagine Fullerton maybe playing.
I would assume Fullerton will be there.
Maybe you put Froling in there to make sure that, to help to get them to the 90s.
I wouldn't be surprised if Froling was chosen.
In New Zealand? I mean, there's no way Wynyard's playing, which sucks.
Nah, yeah. You know, New Zealand, I don't know if they'd throw in Sam Wardenberg. You know, he's a solid 98 guy, I think. Sorry, not 98, he's a solid 99 guy. Quinn Clinton is a solid guard. You know, those two did really well at the Basketball Without Borders camp in Australia recently. I think those two won co-MVPs.
Okay.
So I think they're two guys that New Zealand will look at in the future. But you know, it's slowly getting to the point where Australia, it's not a given that Australia is going to win these tournaments against New Zealand.
Exactly.
which is really cool to see, but also it's good that you know, FIBA Oceania is, you know more about this than me, but it's not going to become obsolete, but it will. We're joining FIBA Asia, and so, you know, it gives us the opportunity for, you know, Australia and New Zealand to get through.
I think we're being more or less kicked out.
Basically.
We're not being kicked out, but we're being over-dominated.
These Spaniards have way too much fun. It's unreal here.
Olga Lulich, tell people how they can follow you, read your stuff.
You can follow me on Twitter, at Olga Lulich.
Give him a spelling.
At OLGUNULUC. You can follow my work on foxsports.com.au. That's where you can find all my stuff. I cover everything. I cover the NBL, which is Australia's league, the NBA, high school basketball, college basketball. So I'm all over everything. I mean, I'm heading to the summer league a bit later this year, or later this month. So, yeah, it's a super busy time. It never ends.
Thank you for coming on the show, man.
Thank you for having me, Dave.
Okay. Yeah, great stuff. It's been fun talking to Ongun last 3/4 of a year or something like that, somewhere around there. Had a chance to meet him for the first time up at the BWB camp in Global Camp in Toronto, and figured he was here, so talked to him about the tournament, talked to him about Australia. You know, he had he knew Dragan, one of the few guys who knew Dragan a little bit ahead of time. So dropping some knowledge. Okay, I need to run. Need to get ready for this wonderful classification games, 9-16. It's going to be some fun stuff still, even though it is the classification. We'll let you know what you're going to be listening to. I know you probably don't know, but I always use the music from freemusicarchive.org, and they have charts. And for the longest time, the number one song on the charts is Broke for Free Night Owl by Broke for Free. And it's been on the top of charts for ages and ages, and it's still on the monthly charts at number one. And it's still number one on the all-time charts with more than 2.8 million downloads. This month, they are at their number one. But this week is a new number one. And so I figured, let's get it on. Let's get it on. It's a French tune. It is by Winston. It's called Ballade Somnifère. In French, so enjoy, and we will see you in a week's time, and au revoir.
Le noble Ulysse jouait du danger, de l'imprudence insensée des marins. Jamais dans ses épreuves ne songeait dans la fraîcheur complice des embruns à remettre son somme jusqu'au soir. Fier dormeur gardait l'exemple en mémoire de ce héros aux peines endurcies au doux sommeil. Point de sursis,
point de sursis, point de sursis.
Songez aux mangeurs pantagruéliques qui pour ménager à ses victuailles un sur trajet jusque à l'ombilic sort de table et s'affale sur la paille. Élémentaire règle des festins, point de félicité pour l'intestin qui déjoue le principe d'inertie au doux sommeil. Point de sursis. Je chanterai les siestes d'autobus que rien n'interrompt jusqu'au terminus. Et je dirai du buveur l'épopée, l'œil toujours clos si le vin est cuvé. Gloire à l'élu qui devant l'assemblée soumettant une loi sans queue ni tête tourne. bridait plutôt que de parler, demeure assis à soigner sa ronflette. Serviteurs zélés des choses publiques, je me fais ton héros dithyrambique. Car il en va de la démocratie au doux sommeil, point de sursis. Entendez-vous s'échapper du boudoir le ronflement des amants méritoires qui s'étant bien appliqué à leur tâche, dans le sommeil conforte leurs attaches. Prince, vous qui menez impitoyable vos peuples à leur labeur effroyable, méditez bien l'adage que voici au doux sommeil. Point de sursis.
My name is Dario Šarić, you listen and take it to charge.